Yeah. Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it.
It's all over!
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Full mount, here's some ground and pound by Nogueira.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric O'Brien, along with Sean Dizay and Joe, who covers all of our social media. He covers all the analytics. He covers the statistics, if I can say that word. And you can catch us, as always, on Twitter and Facebook, just searching WOW Show. Lots of stuff going on, lots to talk about. We had a great event on Wednesday night. Had some ups, had some downs, had some leg kicks, and may or may not have had somebody going to the bathroom in the octagon. We will talk about that. Plus, we'll talk to Patrick Cote, who coaches Tough Nations. We will also talk to a very victorious TJ Dillashaw. Well, we talked to him before his bout with Mike Easton, but you get a little insight into what he was doing on Wednesday night with Mike Easton. And then since Sean is back, you had a little car trouble last week, but you are back now. So I figured we would not start with the news that would make you angriest, but start with your favorite thing that we ever do on the show.
This week in George St. Pierre.
I'm not impressed by your performance.
I'm afraid of you, man. Are you crazy in the head, man?
Let me tell you something, uneducated fool.
This week in George St. Pierre.
So this week in George St. Pierre, he apparently has had enough with all of us continually asking him questions while he's on retirement. He's like that guy who works in the office all year long and tries to take a vacation, and as soon as he takes a vacation, all you want to do is call him the whole time. So he has finally come up and said that one of the main reasons he bowed out of the UFC in the way that he did was because of the drug testing. He said, it bothered me enormously. It's one of the reasons I stopped fighting, not really to teach them, meaning the UFC, a lesson, because that would also punish me. I wanted to do something for the sport I love. I see the direction it's going, and I don't think it makes any sense. This is stupid. And what he's referring to is the number of people in his perception and or fact that are taking some sort of enhancement before they get into the octagon. Now, before any of you weigh in, we obviously have been doing this show for nearly 5 years. This is episode 211. We have a lot of friends in the UFC, in Bellator, in Cage Rage, in King of the Cage. So we, without naming any names, have heard this. I've even heard from a couple people that I know that calling 50% is a low percentage of people that might be doing this sort of thing. So it's not like George is saying anything that we have not heard before. The difference, Sean, is that it's George St. Pierre saying it. And the difference, Sean, is that George St. Pierre is saying it as one of the main reasons he walked away from the sport.
I mean, I'm sure there's other reasons,
sure,
too.
Of course,
you know,
there are.
But I mean,
the 900 punches to the head in the last three fights might be one of them.
I think that, you know, there needs to be a more closer eye on this whole TRT and the exemptions and stuff. Because I think I heard Dana White the other day saying that they were monitoring Bigfoot, you know, all the way. And then the last test that he took, he was at the right levels. And then he took one more shot. And then that's what made him go over the limit. So it's, you know, I mean, I don't know how closer you can get, but it's like, okay, if you're already, I think, you know, whenever the UFC did the last check on him.
Which I would guess would be probably the
right
week before
weigh-ins,
yeah,
or
right,
whatever.
Exactly.
I don't think one more shot would have made a difference in his performance in that fight. You know what I mean? So, you know, and they said that they buried him. I think that's his quote. Like, we buried Bigfoot, you know, and it's like, you know, if that's the case, if you're going to bury somebody because you have, I mean, we talked about it, and this is a whole other issue, whether you want to have it or not, you know. I mean, I think it's nice to get rid of it, you know what I mean? It's like,
get rid of TRT.
Get rid of it, man, because if you just totally get rid of it, it solves every issue there is on the, you know, the whole subject. But for GSP to come out like that and to say what he had to say, I mean, you know, I applaud him, you know, bravo. But at the same time, yeah, I think I read another article on him. He was saying, like, you know, now that he's not fighting, he's able to say certain things, but not too much. But I think he used the word monopoly.
This is the quote you're referring to.
Okay.
It's a relatively new sport. There's one organization that has a monopoly, so the fighters don't have much power. They can't really talk, because if one says what he thinks,
right,
he will get punished.
And then Dana White's rebuttal to that was, like, he was saying, well, Bellator's got Viacom, which is like a $40 billion pocket.
Ken being our business guy, has said how much money that they have and that they clearly could outspend the UFC if that's what they wanted to do. But that's not necessarily what makes a brand successful is the amount of money that you spend.
Right. It's the showcase, obviously.
Yes. And I might have a different perspective. I certainly respect what George has done in the cage. I respect George as a person. He's been on the show a couple times. He's a very, very nice guy. This sort of thing, though, is peculiar to me. And Joe, before the show, and I were talking a little bit about this, about how there's two ways to look at this, Sean. You can say, I applaud him for doing that. He's in a point of leadership. He can bring the spotlight to this and make people pay attention. But on the other hand, it sounds to me a little bit like sour grapes.
It does.
You know, there are people out there that don't think he won that last fight. And there are people.
I think he's looking more like a combination of just fights, not just.
Absolutely.
The last one.
But just in the way things have come out, I think if you felt that there was an issue, this big of an issue, and this issue was what caused you to, quote unquote, in no better way to explain it, quit your job. It was so bad that you quit your job.
Yeah.
To me, you don't need. George didn't seem like a guy that would handle this in the public eye. George seemed like a guy who would have called up Dana and Lorenzo and said, hey, can we go grab lunch? And they would have been like, okay, fine, what do you want to talk about? And he would have sat down and said, hey, guys, one of the main reasons that I left the sport is because I feel that drugs are a big issue in the UFC.
Yeah.
And if you want me to come back, we need to figure this out. As a matter of fact, the only guy I probably would fight is Anderson because the chances of him being on something are slim to none. But other than that, there's nothing in the sport left for me. But I want to help the sport grow and be bigger, so could I maybe be your drugs are.
Well, see, what you did now is you kind of like open up a little can of worms for me because I'm looking at past this whole TRT thing and all these other types of exemptions. I'm looking at it as, okay, when you're a company man, when you're on the payroll, you're not really allowed to say certain things, you know, the code of conduct, this and that.
Yep,
and then
absolutely.
And then when you're not on the payroll, it's like I'm scratching my head over here like, wait, you know, is the UFC the right choice to go if you're a fighter or is somewhere else to go? Because you know, we've all said, you know, it's all about the pay and, you know, how do they treat fighters? And it seems like when people are under the UFC umbrella, I should be careful what I'm saying right now, but, you know, it's everyone's happy. But once they're not under that umbrella, like truth kind of comes. Now, I don't want to say their truth. Okay, let me just add, their truth is coming out about the organization. So I'm like, what's going on there?
You know? I guess I feel as if. Yeah, you've seen this with fighters that are on a smaller pay grade.
Yeah.
And Joe, feel free to jump in here.
But we're talking about the champ.
We're talking about the champ. We're talking
one
about
of the highest pay per view.
One of the guy who's the highest pay per view. He's probably two of the top four $1 million pay per views that we've talked about before. And this seems to me to be like, if you're a company guy and you can't say something, well, that's the price of signing that contract.
Sure.
And when you leave, though, this heel turn, I don't know what other way to call it for the UFC, this heel turn on GSP, this company guy who said how great the sport is and I want to do the Olympics and I want to do this and I want to do that, and then as soon as he's out, he turns around and goes, man, this whole thing is messed up and everybody is on drugs and you can't even, you know, there's a monopoly and you can't even talk to people. That crazy shift to me doesn't really seem the natural progression of what a normal person would do when they left a job, even if you hated that job.
Absolutely. And he stepped away to get out of the limelight, and now he seems to be taking more interviews than he ever has before.
Right.
One thing to point out, guys, is that the UFC isn't alone in this. Major League Baseball has a huge problem. Look at Lance Armstrong, won Tour de France after Tour de France, and didn't get caught until 10 years or so, whatever, later.
The NFL, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely, the NFL.
Well, so, yeah, you've got all of these sports, but one of the things, Sean, like you said earlier, let's just get rid of TRT, right? We'll just get rid of it.
I think it would be a great solution.
It might be the great solution. We've talked about TRT.
I mean, it would suck if you're over 35 still fighting.
But, again, that I would say that that's your body going, yo, bro, become a librarian. You know, you can't do this anymore. It's not about science fixing you to do stuff you're not supposed to do. Any sort of holistic medicine would tell you you need to listen to your body.
I don't blame the fighters that got the exemption. They follow the rules. I mean, they're just following the rules. But like Luke Rockhold last night, he's like, Wednesday night, he's like, I would love to fight Vitor again, but in the United States,
right?
And, you know what he was hitting at. So
sure,
I think it's kind of, and when you look back at performances like that, when, you know, Vitor went on that tear on Luke, you know, it was like, man, that guy really kicked his ass. You know what I mean? It was
He certainly did.
It was tough for Luke. And then Wednesday night, Luke looked great, man.
He looked fantastic against Costa.
I mean, it's
Phillippe.
Like Costa who?
Right,
you know?
Exactly.
I mean, it's like...
and we'll talk about that in the next segment. But I guess the point I'm getting at is if you listen to anybody talk about performance-enhancing drugs, the science is so far ahead of all of these sports.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
so far ahead of Major League Baseball yeah. and the NFL and the Tour de France. I mean, it took them 8 years to catch.
So with that being said, you know, they're always light years ahead of the
yep.
testing. If you just banned it all together, it doesn't matter how far in the future they are with all these.
Well, sure, it does, because they would just
combinations.
You would outlaw TRT. Okay, you can't get an exemption, but science would go, well, we'll give you this crazy other thing that they'll never see. You know, there's a great Joe Rogan podcast that I'll have Joe put up on the Way of the Warrior Facebook page where they talked to what's-his-face from the biochemistry company that was responsible for all the juicing. And he went on to explain that, like, he had insiders in the Olympics, so he knew exactly when they were changing the test, and they would just change the formula. So I don't know that you'll ever...
Big money.
Yeah, it's big money, and I don't know that you'll ever stop it. But it's interesting to me to hear George come out like this in a way that... And I'm not faulting him if this is what he feels he needs to do to make the sport better. But like Joe said, he wanted to get out of the limelight. He's not really doing that. And I'm just thinking there probably were more professional ways he could have handled this. He didn't need to go to MMA Fighting or Cage Potato or MMA.tv
or whatever,
as opposed to going to his two former bosses and having coffee and going, this is why I left. Can I help you fix this?
Yeah, you know, you would think, you know, GSP would just go hide in some little, you know, cabin up there and drink some maple syrup or whatever and just, you know, chill out and just not worry about what's going on, because, you know, that's why he walked, like what Joe said, he walked away from the spotlight. Don't say anything for like 6 months, man.
Right, he walked
just
away from the spotlight from what, Joe? 2 weeks? Has this been 2 weeks? 3 weeks?
If that, three. Because yeah. if
a month tops.
Yeah, he's been, you know, doing mall openings and interviews with the Canadian press, and what they say is that
to be fair, Joe, he really wanted to try Pinkberry and couldn't do that while he was fighting, so he did the mall opening so he could have some yogurt. That's why.
Fair enough. Yeah.
So, but yeah, he hasn't even been gone for a month.
And he's all over the place.
When he walked away, Joe, we said this it won't be very long, because these guys once fame gets its fangs into
you. Yeah, but he was in it for like 8 years.
Once,
how do you just
once
you
fame,
can't cold turkey
one,
8 years?
You know,
of
you,
spotlight.
That's what I'm saying.
Once
the snake gets its fangs into you, you're not really getting away. You're gonna try Pinkberry once or twice, but then you're like, yo, man. This raspberry yogurt's
delicious.
You
turn into Bookie, man.
This raspberry yogurt.
Just be calling me.
Right, it's delicious, but it's not the Octagon. I need the Octagon.
Calm down, Bookie.
But before I get to the Octagon, let me annihilate all my relationships within the Octagon. let me do that first, because I've always wanted to fight in the World Series of Fighting. That's where I want to go. Okay.
Hey, easy, man. Okay. Come on.
What?
They offer good title fights.
Of course they do, but that's not a place for George. You think that's a place for George St. Pierre?
No, I think you should go to Bellator.
Clearly you do.
Well, they got Viacom, man. Get a big-ass paycheck.
Because that welterweight tournament would be a challenge for him. Okay.
Oh, they got rid of Ben. Yeah, you're right. Who is their welterweight guy?
Exactly. So, I know you hate this, but in an effort to keep
don't go there. You got that look.
I have to. And
why?
I have to do it for two reasons. One,
Ken's not here, man.
Every time we mention his name or we put a story up on the Facebook page, we get like 100 or 200 more likes. Now, it's not because they like us. It's because they want to yell at us about stop talking about Brock Lesnar.
Thank you.
But I will say his
name. Thank you, my 200 followers. I appreciate it.
Well, it's like 200 every time we do it. So you probably have like 800 or 900 people that want to get on this bandwagon. But I will say this. Dana said in the scrum that they're talking. They're in talks. The story out of L.A. was 100% true. They are in talks. Brock felt that he's got a lot of regrets in his career in the UFC and that he was sick the entire time. And now that he's been able to sign with the WWE, hear me out before you go crazy, and then I'll let you say whatever you want to say.
Yeah.
Now that he's been with the WWE for a while, so there's a lot of space between him working. He's got a lot of time to rest his body. He feels much better and wants to give this a shot. And what we said last week when you weren't here, and I know you got a little angry about it, and I can appreciate that, is that in 2014, they need more draws. And regardless of what you think about this dude, like I said, we put a story on Facebook about this guy. It is the highest commented, liked, and shared thing that we do that week. And so when you've got that kind of draw and you're facing a year where the only stars you have are Ronda and John at this point, you need another guy, whatever that looks like.
Okay, so let's just say they bring him back, all right? They pay him all that stupid money and all that nonsense. And he gets smashed in a minute and a half by like Travis Brown, you know, or I'll even Stefan Struve, right? He just smashes the guy. Then what?
Well, I don't know that there is a then what. First, because I don't think Joe Silva is going to do that. I think Joe Silva would feed him somebody that would be a spotlight fight for
him. Okay, whatever that tomato can is, smashes him.
And that could happen.
But, of course it could happen.
But you're also...
It probably will happen.
But at this point, there's more people like you in the MMA community, I think, than aren't. And those people are going to tune in to either Fox or pay their money on the pay-per-view to see that possibility in the same way that people flock to Nate or Nick Diaz.
Okay.
Because there are people like you and I who love the way that they just kind of... shake things up like a hornet's nest. And then there are people that just cannot stand. I can't stand that guy. I want to see the Diaz brothers smashed. And then they never really get smashed.
If Brock ever throws a roundhouse kick to the head just one time, then I'll become a fan. Then I'll become a fan. I really will.
Okay.
I'll be like, you know what, Brock? Finally, you're not a 100% complete fighter, but at least you're trying. All right? But listen, I'm not taking anything away from the guy. Yeah, he was born with this body. He's very athletic. He used... to do if I was in his position, I'd be doing the same thing. Trust me, I would
absolutely.
But look, dude, you can't. He's a perfect example of showcasing guy, promoting him way too early, putting him in these big fights. Dude, he beat Randy Couture for the belt. Okay, nah, I'm not. Come on, really?
Again,
Randy's a 205er. This guy's 285.
Nobody,
he could eat Randy for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Nobody's
going
to deny
the
that.
The guy is not a You put him in there with Kane or any top three heavyweights, he'll get murdered.
He also beat Shane Carwin and Frank Mir, though, as a very inexperienced fighter.
I said top three, homie.
Okay, but top three, no doubt.
He'll
get murdered by Travis
Brown.
But what I would say is that at the time that he came in, it wasn't a very deep division.
True.
So you had,
I understand
you
he had, helped it out.
You
he
had got, to yeah, accelerate yeah. it, and he brought all of these yeah. people in. And so now... when you want to build this thing out a little bit, he's a perfect guy to have down there as a draw. And if he gets on a streak, like Mark Hunt, 2 years ago, we wanted to cut the guy from the UFC. And now we're like, title shot, more title shots for Mark Hunt. Put him everywhere. And so
I get the business part of it,
yes.
but I don't. You know what I mean? Like,
well,
I just think,
for me, it'll be interesting to see what he looks like when he comes back. Is he a more complete fighter? He's in the WWE. It's not. It's totally common knowledge that CM Punk is a huge MMA fan, has thought many times about making the switch over. And I know that they are nice to each other. So are they training in their off time? Who knows what this guy's going to look like when he comes back? But Dana and Brock are talking, and it looks more and more like at some point in 2014 we will see this guy. Speaking of 2014, it might be an odd year for Khabib Nurmagomedov, one of our favorite fighters here on the show. He is 21-0 and can't buy a fight. Nobody wants to fight that guy. Nate Diaz said nope. Gil Melendez?
Wait. I think Nate Diaz publicly said yep.
Sure he did.
On contract, he was like,
until they
no.
gave him a piece of paper,
yeah.
he's like, no.
Yeah,
not gonna fight that guy.
He's like, he probably had flashbacks of Rory McDonald when he went to that welterweight fight.
He did. And then, so very quickly after that, when nobody would fight, Ian McCall was like, well, I'll put on weight and I'll fight him, whatever. And he was... Nurmagomedov was nice because he doesn't want to overturn the apple cart and said, dude, we don't really need to do that. Somebody will fight me at some point. And then in comes Michael Johnson on a 2-fight winning streak. He's like, I'll totally fight him because Michael's looking for that stepping stone to get into that conversation. But Nurmagomedov's like, dude, you got to fight a couple more times. You're still there's too much for me to lose by fighting you. And if I were to lose to you, it would be hard to explain. So
yeah, that would be
at this point. At this point, Nurmagomedov is without an opponent, and we will, I guess, wait and see what is going to develop out of that. And when we come back, we will talk UFC Fight Night 35 and a little Ultimate Fighter. It is Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
Way of the Warrior. Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior. Eric O'Brien, along with Sean Desay from Triumph MMA, soon to be the future home of the champ, Kevin Lee. We will hopefully have a little bit of time here to talk about that. Joe is...
we got to make some time.
We will make some time. We'll make some time.
You want me to bring him in here, right?
At some point, I do. I know I have to... There's like some sort of amount of times I have to say his name before he'll come in here. He's like the Beetlejuice of fighters. Like I have to say his name three times and then he shows up.
I think
up.
You had to sponsor him, too.
Of course I do. Pay money.
Deadline's on the 18th.
Pay money and I'll show up. Your check better clear. And then Joe taking a minute away from Facebook and Twitter to join us as Ken is out today.
What up, Joe?
UFC Fight Night 35. I thought there were some really, really good fights and then a couple that we could have done without. if you are not a Cole Miller fan or weren't a Cole Miller fan before Wednesday night, his jiu-jitsu is
just, pretty sick, huh?
It's beautiful, man.
Yeah.
It is beautiful to watch that guy fight.
I mean, he's tall and lanky, so it's just like perfect for him too. You know, it's
and
he's putting
to me, he's putting, you know, and you would could speak to this. He's putting that stuff together on the feet to allow that stuff to happen. It's just gorgeous to watch him fight.
Yeah, absolutely. But, I think he was standing tall, asking for the takedown. He was just begging to get taken down. And then once he had him down, how long did it take to go for the sub?
Not when we watched Cole get on the scene way back in the day,
and
you watch him now, you can see his jiu-jitsu just improving like tenfold. You know what I mean? He's just like. I remember when didn't they throw a belt when like when his brown belt or his black belt one of those times when he won by submission they're like hey here you go dude
and yeah
he's solid man
he's
I like
super
that
solid
kid.
And like Joe just referred to he's at that point of a black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu where he's letting you do what you want to do knowing that he's seven steps ahead of Sam Cecilia because Sam of course had some success in round one and then very quickly was taken away by Cole and just wanted out of the stand-up game, which is what Cole really
wanted. Didn't Cole drop him with the right hand?
Yeah, so he wanted, bam, right, now take me down. Which from a strategy is fun because I'm taking you on the feet, but I really don't want to. I want to choke you out, so I'm just
I need the sub of the night bonus.
I'm going to murder you on the feet so you want to go to the ground so I can actually do what I want to do instead of having to work.
The extra
G's. Instead of working so hard. So that was a great fight.
And then he called out Cowboy, right?
He did call out Cowboy.
See, that's cool right there.
Yeah, and I mean, I like that fight a lot.
Yeah,
I know
that's going to be cool.
Some people on Twitter wanted it to be Conor McGregor, but I like the Cowboy Cerrone thing a little bit better. So,
would Cowboy go down to 45 or would Cole?
He's been talking about it. Yeah, that's why he brought it up. It was awesome that Miller even offered to pay for Mike Dolce to help him cut down to 145.
Right. And then Moraga and Dustin Ortiz, that was a great fight and one that I don't know that Moraga won. That's just my personal opinion. You don't have to agree with me, but that was a good fight. And then I don't disagree with Dana that this was fight of the night. Romero and Derek Brunson, who suffered a broken jaw in that fight. And we say this a lot.
When did that happen? In what part?
Like, I haven't seen. Yeah, I haven't seen what part. But we say this a lot in the show, and this is why I think we're such huge fans. I mean, you train and you fight and that sort of stuff. But as somebody who has admired this sport from afar since the early 90s, this is why I admire. Because a normal human being who breaks their jaw goes home. Derek Brunson stays in there whenever he breaks his jaw, even if it was 1 minute left in the final round, you know, it's still a crazy thing to break your jaw and keep fighting.
Yeah, I've never had my jaw broken, so I have no idea what
Stefan
it feels
Struve
like.
With a crazy, I mean, broken in half from Mark Hunt. I mean, that's the stuff that you're like, this is why I can appreciate what you do in the ring.
Yeah,
because
that's just crazy.
You're on a different.
And I was watching that fight, and, you know, they, like, who was it? Was it Ken Flo or something? Sometimes even Joe Rogan does this. They need to, like, kind of tone it down a little bit because they kept talking about how awesome his wrestling was and how there's no other fighter in the octagon that has the world-class wrestling. And that guy he was taking down more. You know, he was on his back a lot. He got full mounted. And I'm like, where's this wrestling? I don't see it. Because, I know him as a fighter. I never knew him as a wrestler. And then you hear Ken Flo go, oh, well, you know, sometimes in MMA, man, you got to do it different. And I'm like, whatever, dude. Like you put your foot in your mouth. I get it. And it happens. But, you know, sometimes, you know, try not to just favor a fighter so much, you know, be on neutral grounds, you know.
But I think a very huge performance from Romero
on
the stage against a very, very difficult opponent
dude
in Derek
was
Brunson.
Hitting him and stuffing him and also do that third round. You could just he came out strong. And listen, I don't want to get in the whole coach battle and stuff like that, but Brunson, is that
his
name? Yeah, I think it was Greg in his corner. I believe sometimes, man, what Greg does is wrong. And like in that third round, you know, hey, you're winning. Let's coast it. Somebody just stick and move. And then like when you do that, whether it's a title fight or not, because he did that to Dotson, this happens, you know, like Tim Bosch, you know, Yushin Okami came back from behind and smashed Okami. You know, this guy came back and finished the fight. He didn't let it go to the judges.
No.
If he did, it would have been 2-1. You know, he would have lost. He finished that fight
in a brutal fashion. Yes. I mean, those elbows were just brutal.
You know, dude. And I'm sorry, but you got to put that. Even if you're ahead, you still have to have that urgency. You still got to go for the finish and end this fight.
And I think it was, if I'm wrong, I apologize, but I think on Twitter on Wednesday night, it was Mike Fagan, who's part of the Fight Fans Radio Network.
Yeah.
I think he tweeted that he wanted Greg Jackson to follow him around at work and tell him how awesome he's doing.
Yeah. Calm down. Take a deep breath. Great.
You're doing a great job.
Good job. Good job in there. So, everything looks great. What else would I need to do?
Romero
just
with a big fight. And then TJ Dillashaw, who you will hear here in a minute. We talked to him on Monday prior to this fight. A stunning performance over Mike Easton.
Yeah.
He looked fantastic. And I said this on Twitter. I've said it on the show. I will continue to say this. You cannot understate the importance of Dwayne Ludwig on that team.
I can.
He has changed that team to, I mean, they look fantastic.
I'm just being a hater.
I know you are, but some of those, even a hater could appreciate some of those.
Yeah, he's done a great job.
Some of those combos
there,
that Dillashaw put on Easton.
Yeah, that was pretty sick.
Were brutal.
But, hey, so check this out. Rumor around the private underground MMA world that some of us are privileged to live in.
Is that like Fight Club?
Yeah, whatever.
Did you break the first rule?
I didn't say anything, man. I said privilege.
All right.
All right, check it out. I hear that in the gym that TJ Dillashaw is the man there at Alpha Male.
I have also heard said rumor that
nobody
really wants to fight
him. Out of everyone there, Uriah, all those boys, I heard that TJ is the man over there. Like, he's the one that no one wants to mess with.
And if you did not hear the interview, you will hear when I get to ask him the question. If he wins and Uriah wins, what's going to happen? His answer will surprise you because you just don't hear it very often. But we'll play that next. I'm not even going to talk about the Larkin-Tavares fight because I don't think anyone should have had to suffer through it. It was a terrible fight on both parties. Glad that Brad won that, but whatever. I mean, for a co-main event, it was really lackluster. And thankfully, the Luke Rockhold that we all know from Strikeforce finally showed up, and Kostas Filipou had really no chance. And I believe Boss Rutten probably had a very good night last night, getting very excited about the liver being finishes with body shots and then a soccer kick for good measure.
It was so cool because I was watching it. He landed the head kick, and I'm like, man, he had his guard really high up for that. I was like, he should go to the body. Oh, he did it. He went to the body. I got so excited, because, you can't help but to think the same way. You're like, dude, that was a high check he did. Go to the bot, and then he does, and you're like, well, this guy obviously knows how to fight.
He looked fabulous.
Oh, man, dude, he didn't even break a sweat.
Nope.
He was smiling the whole time.
He was, and he called out Vitor Belfort in America, then called out Michael Bisping, mostly because that's probably more realistic.
Yeah, there's, something about them sparring, and Bisping, got the better of him in sparring way back, and that's why they have a little...
There's some sort of tiff, so we'll see which one of those gets signed. My guess is it will be Bisping at this point,
because
Vitor sounds like he might be busy.
Is Bisping healthy yet? Can you see?
Do we know that, Joe?
They're working on it. I think in the next few months he was supposed to be cleared for full sparring.
Yeah.
So maybe by the end of the year you'll see that. Rockhold take one more fight or something like that.
Yeah, because he wants to stay busy.
He certainly does, because he's a guy that not only the UFC wants to stay busy because he's a good-looking guy, he's great on the microphone, and you want to build up.
He's tall for that middleweight class,
and he's tall for the middleweight, and you certainly want to start building up more serial killers in that division so that if Weidman beats Belfort, that we have people that we're excited to see Weidman take on. Because not that I don't want to see this, because Weidman obviously had a huge year in 2013, and beating Vitor Belfort would be a huge thing that would, I think, cement the other two fights with Anderson Silva in my mind, because you beat...
Dude, Luke and Machida.
That's a great fight.
The 85 weight class is so stacked, man. I was looking at their top tens.
This
man.
Is what I'm saying: is that you want to build these guys.
Jacques Gray's hanging, and they fought already.
Yeah.
Dude. I like the 85 weight class.
Yeah, there's
right
a lot
now.
Of good fights there right
Those
now.
Guys
so
are big.
Speaking of the UFC and our local connection here, I promised we would give you some time to talk about the status of what Kevin Lee has going on, fighting in February in the UFC.
February 1st.
How is how's camp going?
Camp's going great, man. I couldn't ask for a better camp right now. Things are going smooth. I mean, for those of you that have followed us on Facebook, yes, we do workouts at 2 a.m. We call them the Mayweather or / crackhead workouts.
Is that to get on time, or what is that for?
You know what, man? We train from A to Z, and I want to do everything so unconventional and so out of the norm, and then as we get closer to fight date, we kind of tone it back down and so I'm going to start, obviously training and sparring him on Saturday nights instead of Saturday at noon, things like that, But what I want to do, I try to do this with all my fighters, amateur or pro. I like to try to break them down right before camp, mix them all up in their head, you know, not like necessarily like the way the military does, but, you know, like break them down to ground zero and then just kind of rebuild them back up. And we have a great strength and conditioning coach, an Olympic trainer guy, Jason Ross, right down the street. Dude, awesome. I mean, he's doing stuff that's just blowing my mind. It's just great. And you know, if it was summertime, I wouldn't be so worried about the strength and conditioning because I can take him to, like, a track and do the bleachers. But it's winter, man. It's hard. It's brutal. And he's got a great facility. And it's just, like, I sparred Kevin the other day. We did, with no time limit, we just did about 45 minutes of pure boxing. And I really felt the difference in his cardio. I mean, there was a point there I was like, all right, I think it's a water break time, you know? It's like, there's no clock gone, so I'll just call time and whatever.
For those of us who are interested in the science of all this, how's the weight cut going? Like, where are you at right now and where do you want to be?
Well, apparently when I walked in the door, I looked 10 pounds lighter.
You
than
do
you,
look
so.
Tiny. I mean, so clearly you guys are working your tails off, which is awesome, but you look much smaller than you did 2 weeks ago. So.
You know, it's his weight cut's going perfect. He's... You know, the other day we had this, like, a sponsor kind of lunch meeting thing. And, you know, he brought his spinach and his little lunch thing with him. He didn't order off the menu. So he's totally on point. He's doing everything great. This is probably the best output performance he's been doing. You know, I'm just really, really happy with everything. And keep crossing my fingers, you know. We're flying out here about, 2 weeks or so, we head out. So.
Absolutely. So you can celebrate my birthday by winning. That's what you can do.
Yeah, your birthday's win.
Would be that Sunday. The very
next
really?
Day. Yes. Well, you know what, man? We will. We'll give you a shout-out, man.
All right. When we come back, TJ Dillashaw will join us, as well as Patrick Cote. The Ultimate Fighter Nations began this week. We'll talk to him about the differences between this season and perhaps the Ronda Rousey season. It's Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior. Eric O'Brien along with Ken Evans and Sean Dizay, available on Twitter and Facebook at Wow Show. It is a big week. Wednesday night, we will have not only UFC Fight Night 35, we will also have the Ultimate Fighter Nation. So joining us first from UFC Fight Night 35, he is going to be taking on Mike Easton. TJ Dillashaw joins us. TJ, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Awesome, awesome. Great to have you back on the show. A big fight this Wednesday night as you take on Mike Easton. You've been talking a little bit both last week and the week prior about the loss to Rafael Sunsau and how you are one of those guys who's also calling for changing and judging and maybe saying there might be a bit of corruption when you head to other countries. When you had that loss, what happened to you when you did that to get back to be ready for Mike Easton? Because you look on Twitter in incredible shape. You sound like you're ready to win this thing. How long does it take you to kind of get to bounce back from that thing that I think most of us thought you won?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough, you know, especially on a 4-fight win streak. You know, I'm building my way up to get to that number one contender spot. What I got to do is I got to take positive things from it. It sucked really bad to lose that fight, especially when you feel like you won it. But ultimately, I got to take things away from it, saying, like, you know, there's things I didn't do that I could have done even better to win that fight even more decisively. You know, if I would have finished that choke first round, I don't think I would have noticed the things that I've been doing wrong. Not saying that I do them wrong every time. It's just the fact that I need to make sure I'm staying consistent and, making sure I'm touching, not coming in always for the kill, and utilizing my wrestling at all times and staying where I'm most dominant. Making sure I'm just finishing fights and winning the rounds real decisively.
Getting back on the winning streak against Mike Easton this week obviously is a huge thing for you. And you've been very vocal about his fighting style and how, and I agree, you've got a lot more weapons than he does. Going into this fight, you were supposed to fight Mike Easton, what, about 6, 7, 8 months ago? Maybe even longer?
About a year ago.
Year ago. So does that make preparation for this fight easier because you already had him on the radar, then you just put him back on the radar? Or do you kind of restart your kind of scouting of an opponent like that?
I mean, it makes it easier because I've watched him before and I've always already kind of was getting ready for him, like you said. But for the most part, you just kind of restart every time. You got to clear your mind of whoever you fought before, or whoever you're planning on fighting, and worry about the opponent right in front of you. me and Dwayne have done some good research on him, and I'm feeling really prepared.
And how amazing is it to train at Alpha Male right now with Dwayne? It seems like you guys have just – Alpha Male is always a dominant team, but it seems like what Dwayne has done to that team is nothing short of astounding, to take it from a major, amazing camp to this camp that I think everyone can't stop talking about.
Yeah, I mean, the guy's a technical genius, man. I mean, not only does he know everything about kickboxing, he mixes it well into MMA and making things work for each person's style. He doesn't make everyone do the same things. He changes it up for how you fight. He's got a good eye for it. And, man, he just is so passionate about it. I mean, he cares more than we do, I even think. he's in the corner more amped up than I am to get ready to fight. He's more nervous than everyone's fighting. The lows are low for him, and the highs are even higher, you know?
TJ Dillashaw joining us. He will be fighting Mike Easton Wednesday night at Fox Sports 1, and then the Ultimate Fighter will kick off after that. This seems like 2014, TJ, is going to be the year of the MMA fan with all of this stuff that we get to consume with Fight Pass, 54 events this year. For 2014, what is that number one thing that you want to get done by the end of the year? Is it fight for the title? Is it win 3 times in a row? What is that thing, the number one thing that you want to get done this year?
I mean, shoot, I would love to fight for the title. You know, it's just all about what the UFC wants to do with me and how I'm performing in my fights. I got to be dominant in every fight so I get that chance. It also depends on what your Uriah Faber's planning on doing here in a couple weeks and getting that title.
So you would not fight Uriah?
I mean, unless he's holding on to my belt. I mean, I'm calling that my belt, you know?
Fair enough.
As long as if he's holding on to that belt for a while, I mean, that's something I'm going to have to do. There's only one belt, and it's a world championship. You know, it's something that it's a sport, and you might have to do it against your friends. It's been done before. Obviously, it'd be him holding on to the belt and being in my way for a while. You know, it's not like I'm eager to fight the guy.
No. That's not, but you hear a lot of a lot of guys are like, absolutely no. Well, I'll never fight him. You know, Cormier and Cain, they'll never fight each other. I wasn't asking like, will you fight him tomorrow? I meant like,
I understand. I'm just kind of making it clear. It's just the fact that, you know, he got me into the sport, so it is a tough question. He's the one that talked me out of going to grad school and to try out fighting, and you know, I did that, and I thank him for that. So it's kind of hard to say, yeah, I want to beat the guy when he's a world champion, but you know, it all depends on the timing, I guess.
It certainly does, and TJ, you've seen it already this year. It's beginning to be a little bit of a weird year in the UFC, as Uriah Faber wasn't the guy who was supposed to fight for the title, and now he is. So as a fan favorite, which you are, and I hope you know that, it's very easy to think of very many opportunities where you could be in that title contention before the end of the year, especially getting past Mike Easting on Wednesday night.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's the plan, and I plan on doing it in a dominant fashion so I get there even faster. You know, I gotta show off my skills a little bit and just continue what I do and practice every single day and practice with the best and feel good.
Now, TJ, we talked to Travis Brown before he fought Josh Barnett, and we asked him about the loss on his record and if he wanted to avenge that or go for the title, and he said, I would avenge it if that came about. Otherwise, I would go for the title. Are you a guy that would want to fight Rafael at some point, or would you just, is the belt the number one goal? You're not somebody who looks fast in reverse on opponents.
Well, I think Travis Brown answered it perfectly. You know, I mean, obviously, number one goal is getting to that title shot. But if the Sensei was in the way, I would love to get that rematch because, I mean, that was my fight. You know, I mean, obviously, the title shot's more important. I feel like I already won that fight, but I'd love to get that off my record and to prove to everyone that, you know, that was my fight to begin with.
Awesome. TJ Dillashaw joining us. He will be on Fox Sports 1 taking on Mike Easton. Should be an awesome fight, and I look forward to seeing you have your hand raised in the octagon on Wednesday night. Good luck, and we will talk to you soon, my friend. Have a great year.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that.
And from TJ Dillashaw to one of the coaches of Ultimate Fighter Nations, he will be taking on Kyle Noak and the team from Australia. From Team Canada, Patrick Côté with us. Patrick, how are you?
Yeah, pretty good, thanks.
It is going. It's a big week for you as the Ultimate Fighter Nations kicks off on Wednesday night. Talk to me a little bit about this process. How did you get involved in the show? What was it like being a coach on the show? Talk to me through this whole thing.
Well, first of all, you know, I've been part of the show in 2006 at the Ultimate Fighter Season 4, the comeback. I made through the final, but I came up short. And after that, I fought for the UFC, and this year, that's my 10th year in the UFC. So I think you can call me a veteran, I think so. And, you know, after that, you know, they start to do, like, the nation against nation, and this is the fourth time they're doing it, Canada against Australia. And when the news came out, you know, I had a good idea that maybe I will be part of it, but, you know, I didn't run for it. I didn't do anything, you know, on Twitter or something like that about you know, people talking about me or people voting for me. But, you know, I had a pretty good idea that I had a chance to make it. And 2 months before the show started to film, they called me and they asked me if I wanted to be the head coach of Team Canada, and I said yes.
Absolutely. And for people who, you know, this has been over the last 12 months kind of a growing period for the UFC and MMA, so there's going to be a lot of people tuning in on Wednesday that may not be as well versed with the product as, let's say, somebody like myself or a veteran like you with 10 years in the UFC. This is a great way for somebody to get to know how MMA works and what training is like. And while the UFC doesn't use tournaments except for in the Ultimate Fighter, this is a great way to get a look at some great new fighters in the welterweight and middleweight division, right?
Yeah, you have to understand that, you know, before the first season of the Ultimate Fighter, you know, before that, the sport was doing okay, but, you know, they needed not a kick, you know, to put the sport on another level. And when they do the Ultimate Fighter season one, after the show, after the incredible final fight, you know, the sport just exploded in the UFC, in the U.S. So the thing is, this sport right now is where it is because of this show, because of the first season of this show. And after that, they just start to do, like, season after season. And every year, you can see, like, new prospects. There's some guys who fought in this show that became, you know, a UFC world champion. And right now, the UFC is so stacked that it's very, very hard to get in. You know, if you get in by yourself, it's because you're very, very special, or you have a good character, or, you know, you have an incredible record. If not, the Ultimate Fighter is probably the best option for you if you want to get in the UFC to win this show and have a contract.
Well, not only that, Patrick, but even in this show, you have what, 8 fighters on this roster in each of the divisions that are undefeated? I mean, there's what, 8 or 9 undefeated fighters this season?
They're not all undefeated, but they have a winning record, and you know, a really strong winning record. You know, yes, this season it's middleweight and welterweight, so 170 and 185, 4 guys in each division, and you know, my team Canada going against the Australian.
Now, who, if somebody is looking at the middleweight and the welterweight guys that are in this season, who are some people that we should pay attention to this season?
In my team, you know, the welterweight division is very, very hard. It's very, very, very good. You know, the thing is, on paper, you know, we were, you know, way better than the Australian, and they know that. But you know what? Fight is the fight, and you'll see like a couple surprises during the season. And me too. I was in shock sometime about the result of certain fight. And you know, fight is the fight. When you can be a favorite by a million on paper, but when the fight starts, it's 50-50. It's about who won the most, who's able to pass the pain, how tired they are. There's a lot of things involved inside the cage. A lot of things can change, but you know, my guys came ready to fight since the first day, and the same thing with the Australian. So all the fights were insane, and yeah, don't miss the premiere, because you know it's gonna set the tone for the season.
Now, Patrick, Dana says this literally every season, but I'm gonna ask you: is this the best season to date?
It's the best season because it's a very, very different season. There's not a lot of drama, you know, between those guys. But, yes, they have drama, but not like crazy like the other season. It's you're going to see more professionalism about those guys, more, you know, work ethic. They came in the show very to win this show, not to be in the front of the camera, not to be like the pretty boy, not to have more girls after the show. You know what I mean? They came in the show because, you know, they had one idea in their head, and to win this show. And that's why this season is going to be different, because the training was crazy, and you know, the and the fights were insane. And especially when you represent your country like that, you know, nation against nation, there's a lot of little things, a little bit more, you know, about your pride. You want to win this show, but you want to represent your country well. So that's why this season is going to be fantastic.
It is the Ultimate Fighter Nation's Patrick Cote is on the line with us, coaching against Kyle Noak. Patrick, one more question before I let you go. Was this experience cool enough that you would want to do it again?
Oh, 100% sure. That was more work than I was expected, but I had a blast. You know, you have to – it's simple when you are a fighter in this show. You know, you keep your weight down, you go in the gym, you train – you do what your trainer said and you fight. It's very, very simple. But when you're a trainer, you have to take care of, you know, the game plan. You study the opponent. You have to put the trainer on. You have to put the training. You have to adjust yourself about all the character in your team. That was a lot of work. But man, I'll do it again. And we had a blast. That was fun to do it. And, you know, I had a good guys in my team, not just skills-wise, but personality. And, that was fun, man.
Patrick Cote joining us. The Ultimate Fighter Nations debuts Wednesday night on Fox Sports 1. Patrick, always a pleasure to talk to you. Great hearing your voice. Have a wonderful 2014. We look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you very much, guys. Have a great day.
You can catch a new episode of Ultimate Fighter Nations every single Wednesday night. And, of course, catch up with us all the time on Twitter and Facebook at WOW Show. It's Way of the Warrior, your MMA show. This time next year.